wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake.
You notice I didn't bother leaving my headphones on.
No, I'm going to take my headphones off. Sorry. I'm going to loop them over my chair here. We have our headphones because we're going to play a little YouTube later.
Very little. Didn't merit wearing the headphones for the entire time. So.
But a bit later on the show, we are going to talk about dentist anesthesiology, partly.
Later. Yeah, sorry, partly. It's a rabbit hole of
YouTube rabbit hole, yeah. Which I know many of us are probably will want to do on occasion. I know, yeah. I do it. Yeah. I've actually got to the stage where I have an iPad, mm-hmm. or a, what do you call those things if it's not the Apple one? Tablet. Sorry, yeah, tablet. Okay. That's the correct term for it. I have a tablet and I now just leave it open on different YouTube pages. That, for example, I watch a lot of old TV because mm-hmm. free, and you know, someone's put up a playlist of shows, and if there's, you know, 15 episodes, I just completely leave it there and then just get lost in YouTube. We'll discuss that a bit later.
Okay,
we were out and about though. We wanted to chat first. We went to a DC United game the other week,
and sure.
we don't do sports on this show, but it was notable because DC United just opened a new stadium this summer. Mm-hmm. They used to play in the old RFK Stadium, which was for many years home of the old Washington Senators.
Senators and the Redskins both.
And the Redskins. Shaped,
it's kind of funny, although it looks round, it's actually got little bumps off to where right field and left field are for...
Yeah.
Theoretically, grandstands.
But anyway, DC United played at RFK for many, many years. It was one of the venues used during the 1994 World Cup. I remember going to a couple of games there myself. And it was a grand old arena because it's now just empty and vacant. And when that thing was packed, it was a rarity I found for an American arena. And then it had a relatively, not a full size, but a relatively small roof. And if you go to most college stadiums these days,
right.
It's quite rare that there's really that they're all open. So anyway, DC United have moved, and they've just finished building, I think, to the tune of $400 million or something like that. They built a what do you call it when it's just for the purpose of soccer stadium, and mm-hmm. you were able to snag us very nice tickets, and we went to a game the other week.
Audi Field.
You know,
in fact, before we got there very early because we wanted to get the full week, we had club seats, which means it included all the food and drink you could have.
Oh yeah,
for one in the afternoon game. 12:30, whatever it was early, and so the place was opening up at like 11:30, and for some reason it basically said the fan plaza opens up at 11. Well, it turns out the fan plaza is just outside of the stadium. I thought you had to go
the fan plaza is basically a very badly manicured 50 square yard lawn. That's pretty much what it is, right. To be entirely fair.
And at the moment, I'm sure they have greater aspirations for it. So I really quickly signed up for something with my email address and dribbled a soccer ball around and got a free t-shirt that says Audi something on the back and has the DC United.
It's a good looking t-shirt. It was a nice t-shirt
for what it was.
And you had to show off your soccer skills, and then we played some cornhole. Yeah, outside.
I won, of course, you know.
So it was a classic. It's called a fan plaza now.
Then the whole family getting there early was to get into the club section, because as long as you're going to have an all you can eat and drink, you want to have the time to eat and drink. So we were in an hour and a half before kickoff.
Yes, so I think it opened up 11:30
because it was a morning game. They had a lot of breakfast foods. They had this like big casserole French toast with a Captain Crunch mixed in.
Is that what it was?
And
it didn't look like my thing, I must say.
It was
say.
Pretty good. It was very sweet. But yeah. they had like, you know, sausages and eggs and all that kind of stuff.
And they had some traditional ballpark food. I had like four. I think over the course of the afternoon, I may have eaten four or five. About 40 inches worth of bratwurst, I think is probably a good way of putting it. Yeah.
They were serving, in addition to some beers, and they had like a limited selection of beers that were free. They also had some Strongbow cider, which I mixed with some Sprite, my own version of a shandy kind of thing like that. But it was very, very sweet, but, you know, good for 11:30 in the morning.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, I think the face value on those tickets was, what, $150 a ticket? $130
because
bucks.
It came off of a season ticket package. I think it was like $125. But if you go like cold and buy tickets, it's more like $150 or $165. I went looking because one of the things we were we'll talk more about the details, but we were duly impressed with it enough so that you said, oh, this would be fun to come back. This is a Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon game, so we were thinking, you know, a nighttime game would be more rowdy and fun and the like. But the ticket prices are high. I mean, they're high. Like when we were looking on the way out, those are resale tickets that are being sold under face because I think they're part of season packages.
Okay.
So like I think even in the higher reaches, the tickets are a solid $40 or so, even for like off in the corners.
See, it's interesting you say that, and I guess a lot of this depends on perception. You know, I don't think, to be honest with you, to go to a pro sports event, if someone told me I was getting in for $40, I'd go, that's pretty reasonable.
And, yeah, you can go to a baseball game for $25 or so if you're going to take the nosebleeds.
Yeah, sure, but I didn't get a sense, and we are going to talk a little bit about it is purpose-built for soccer. So what that means is it has, obviously, a soccer field is rectangular. Yes. Well, no, I mean, I'm just walking through this. So it very much has four sides to it. So it's not like, it's not a field squeezed into a traditional oval or round stadium.
Right.
So there are four distinct sides to it. It is built very steep.
On the ends, at least.
On the ends, at least, yeah. So what that means is that you're going to be over the field rather than back from the field. And even where we were sitting on the sideline, probably level with the edge of the penalty box at one end. I mean, I don't know how many rows back were we? I don't know, about 14. Yeah, 14 rows back. I don't know. I felt like I had a really good view. Mm-hmm. And like I say, the stadium is purpose-built for soccer, so it has four stands that are quite tall and then has partial roof on both of the sideline stands. But I didn't feel... I don't know. I guess... So I think we had pretty good seats. So if the face value on those tickets was, let's go on the high side and say $150, and that got us all kinds of free food and drink, I don't know. I think the comparison seat at, say, an NFL game, or a comparison seat at, say, the Washington Capitals or an NBA team, we're going to be looking at $200, $250, I would think, with all that food and stuff thrown in. I don't know. I mean, I think Redskins are the closest NFL franchise to us, and those tickets start at like $90.
I mean, it's very clear that those sports occupy a higher tranche of the attention, sure, of America. Sure. So I would expect the soccer team tickets to be a little bit less. But I'm sure they were less at RFK. But to my
point then, and I guess you're right. I guess ultimately you have to compare the innate value of the experience.
Only it's only 2 hours of action as opposed to these other games where you got 4 hours, you know.
Well, there you go. But for me, for 2 hours of action, I don't know. So when we left, we sat in the car and we went online to see, well, how much, obviously we were on sort of on a bit of a treat sitting in those seats. I wouldn't do that all the time, but we were having a conversation about, yeah, you know, I'd come on a summer's night and have a beer and sit in the corner and get a cheap seat. The cheap seats were starting, you know, $28-$30 to
sit those are
high up in the corner.
So that's what I figured out afterwards.
So what does that mean then?
Meaning, so somebody bought a season package and they're selling off ones they're not using, or they bought it just to resell it.
Okay.
So because they bought a season package, they got them at a lower price. If you were to go into that game, like, so the game's coming up against Toronto, like,
so what's a cheap seat for a game coming up?
$45 or $50.
Okay, yeah, and then I guess at that moment then, you start looking at it in terms of a value judgment. You're right, you can definitely go to baseball for a lot cheaper. I will say this, though, I don't think you can go to another professional. You can't go to football. I challenge anyone to find me a Caps or an NBA ticket that's $40, $50 that isn't severe nosebleed. And what I'm saying is the way the stadium is designed, you know, you may be higher up, but to be fair, I don't know. I looked at the place. I remember, you know, we got in early and we were looking around and I'm thinking there's not really a bad seat in the house here, which I thought was... Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I was quite impressed with that. And so, I don't know, for that kind of price, and you just take the metro and you walk and you maybe have a beer and a hot dog. I don't know. To me, it felt like a more affordable
sports. But I think it should be cheaper.
You do?
Yeah.
And how much cheaper?
20% cheaper. That would be a good deal.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So anyway, we were. I actually have the program from the game here because, again, I think part of the attraction for us was not going to see MLS soccer, which, to be fair,
it's a better game than most. When I've tuned on the TV, sometimes I get a little frustrated with it, but that was a better game.
Pretty good game.
Very rollicking. I mean, I saw more balls inadvertently kicked out of bounds than I would normally be accustomed to. But
yeah,
when people roll and they were rolling pretty good, and it seems to, as we were joking, it seems to be the home of the back heel, or like, you know, the player, the you know, Wayne Rooney's on the team, and like every time the ball come by him, and he, you know, it looks very a big flare because, you know, you flick it backwards to somebody, but it's really basically like, I don't want to have to turn around and really work this very hard, so I'm just kind of tap it here and see if it works out.
We saw the first tie in the new stadium, because obviously it's a brand new stadium.
We used the official terminology, isn't it? A tie,
whatever. The scores were level at the end of 90 minutes. The one thing I found quite interesting about the whole experience, and you mentioned, obviously, you know, Wayne Rooney is a, you know, I think it's fair to say he's a
Wayne Rooney, for those Wayne who don't Rooney, know, being a long time
highest echelon international team. Star. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
He played for Manchester United and played for the English national team for many years.
He was captain.
Isn't he like the leading goal scorer for the national team
or something like that? So he's a pretty high grade star in the world.
He's older,
of soccer.
But he's not old.
I think he's 32, 33. They were playing the New York Red Bulls, mm-hmm. which is a team that I think originally.
Also has a former British guy. Well, I'm still British, but. Bradley Wright Phillips,
right? Yeah, who really was a bit of a journeyman. Yeah, he was a bit of a journeyman in his career in Europe, but he's come here and sort of found, I think he's about the same age, and he's sort of found a second life. The New York Red Bulls started life in MLS as the New York New Jersey Metro Stars. That was their original name, but of course now that they're owned, I guess, by whoever is the Red Bull.
Or are they just like, because, you know, Red Bull's got teams all over the globe, so I don't know if they own the teams or if they just have this massive
deals. To be fair, for a, you know,
it would have been a good thing to research, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Bull, the sports energy drink, and I'll let you research while I sort of ramble on for a minute. Red Bull, the energy drink, in terms of their sponsorship presence, they are the equivalent of a 1970s cigarette manufacturer, tobacco company. Remember back in the day when tobacco companies used to sponsor everything?
Yeah, but they were sponsoring, right? So that's
especially motor racing. Well, Red Bull, they are big into motor racing, all forms of motor racing,
right? That's extreme sports sponsorship.
But they actually, their name is on a number of teams. I think there's a Red Bull team in the German Bundesliga. There's a Red Bull team. So again, I don't know if they have an ownership stake or.
Is
it true sponsorship?
That's who owns Red Bull. Let's see.
And so that is kind of interesting. So a number of years ago, the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars were renamed as the New York Red Bulls.
Red Bull GmbH, I guess. I mean, it's...
Yeah, so it's an ownership deal where Red Bull, the energy drink company, have clearly made enough money keeping all of us up until 4 a.m. drinking their product and are now able to buy sports franchises across the world.
And GmbH, by the way, for people who don't know, it's like a German Inc., like a corp.
Okay.
Owned by an Austrian entrepreneur and Thai businessman.
Yeah. So what I found, to switch back to the fan experience of going, what I found most interesting about the experience, obviously soccer is known for having loud and passionate fans that sing songs, and depending what country you're in, people play drums, or there's an occasional person. If you watch the World Cup game, you can often hear vuvuzela or someone honking away on a trumpet or something during a game. DC United have a whole one end behind the goal where they're sort of hardcore fans, the Screaming Eagles and the Barra Brava stand, and they're all wearing black.
DC
and they've
Ultra.
Got DC Ultras, that's right, yes. Although, to be entirely fair, having grown up in Europe where, yeah, the Ultras actually mean there is an outside chance of getting your head kicked in, I think you're perfectly safe at an MLS game. But there was a lot of waving of flags and banging drums all game. And what I found was quite interesting, too, was this is one of the MLS's sort of older school rivalries, that of being a Sunday game, I'd say there were a couple of hundred of Red Bull fans that had come down from New York. They all entered the stadium in one go, chanting some songs that I kind of recognized. But I did find,
Just sang Twist and Shout three times.
There must be some thing there that they like, that when they score, they sing Twist and Shout. But they did have a couple of chants with profanity in them. But I did find, either because there are only a couple of hundred of them, or there seemed to be sort of a slight sense of self-censorship. And what I mean by that is this. When you go to a soccer game in Europe, especially when you go to England, and back this summer, I was back and I went to see my beloved Arsenal Football Club play in the Premier League against Manchester City, 60,000 people at the Emirates Stadium in North London for the season opener. I was lucky enough to get pretty decent seats down behind one goal, not far from where about 7,000 Manchester City fans were all penned together in the corner. In Europe, and I guess obviously if the crowd is three times the size and the noise is louder and the words are clearer, if you're singing a chant that has a profanity in it, you can hear that and there's no mistaking what word is being bellowed around. And if you, right. even if you watch on TV here, I know TV fiddle around with the sound, but there are moments when if you're watching TV on a Saturday morning, you can hear a couple
sometimes,
of...
Sometimes, yeah, I always have a hard time. But you, it's probably better for you because you've heard them before, so I'd imagine...
Yes.
And I also...
So,
like,
I found it interesting that the Red Bull fans were singing some of the same songs, but I don't know, they seem to be, you know, we're all slightly more polite and middle class here in America.
This goes to the whole question of the MLS. I mean, like, because the MLS has these supporters clubs and people are into it, but it is different. I mean, these aren't
slightly
people didn't grow up with these teams.
Right.
It wasn't handed down by the parents, so it's a little bit created. It's cool. I mean, it's legit. It's not like it's Disney. It's not totally made up, but it's a little bit like created, and like because they have these templates of these other nations, and like so they do, like other places they do things that are non your like the TV.
It's a bit like playing dress up, isn't it?
A little bit, you know. Like
bit,
I mean,
yeah.
I think the people who are into it, like you know, the people in the DC thing, they're really into it. I mean, that's their club, but it's not. It's almost like it's a little bit of a cosplay kind of thing. You know,
yeah, that's
stuff,
actually good.
Know,
like, that's a good way of putting it.
You know, they're into that. They're into it legitimately, but it doesn't really. It doesn't.
It doesn't speak.
There's
it doesn't
a bigger
speak to your
buffer
identity.
Between that, right? Like, so
right.
if you're going there with your family, I don't think anybody's like on the edge of that. Whereas if you're in England, you're probably like, "Ooh, maybe I will join the Super Duper Supporters Club." But nah, I'm just mostly. But it's a bit of a gradient there. Where here, it's more like different groups and constituents, which is a bit of a thing for the MLS. I mean, they're always trying to figure out how to integrate that core without alienating the fact that they want regular people coming to the games
right.
on a regular basis. And so for DC, that DC Ultra group was originally denied participation in that open seating end.
Yeah.
And gotten some arguments with them. And I think the talk, if I remember right, was that they get a certain allotment of tickets for these folks, and they were reselling a lot.
They were reselling
and
them,
I see
yeah.
a lot of them. I see a decent number of those general admission tickets on resale on StubHub and stuff. So, you know, it's clear they're not all taken up. Because you see a bunch on resale in that section that they have a note there. And I think even, you know, the site says like, okay, just so you know, if you go here, everybody's in this section, they're standing, you know, so don't buy this ticket with your family thinking you're going to like sit and have a picnic.
Yeah. So there is, I mean, I think to your point, there's definitely, you know, there is sort of a slightly, you're right. Cosplay is a good way of putting it in terms of why people are there. But I'll also be very fair too. As someone who obviously I grew up in England, I support my local team. I've actually been to away games, which is always an interesting experience. Like I say, there are about, I'm guessing, about 300 New York fans in the corner who had all come and they entered the stadium at once and they were chanting and singing.
Got a little less than that, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know something? You know, that's a pretty hefty investment right. of time.
Well, you
to
know,
come
the
down
nice thing,
for so what I'm saying is I don't think we are criticizing.
No, that's a thing. I mean, it's not like they're fake supporters; they're real supporters.
No, exactly. Yeah, you know, and I didn't want to come across and just say that it was a whole load of people just sort of.
The big advantage between here and there is, you know, like in England, you got a bunch of the teams that are in London, so it's just a tube ride to go to the other game.
Right.
And even when it's away in Manchester, you could take a train from London to Manchester.
It still takes 3 hours. Oh, London to Manchester is, you know, you're still giving up your day.
But it's easy enough to do, you know.
No, it's easy to do, yes,
yeah,
but it's,
whereas,
still it's still a time,
you know,
commitment.
DC to New York, you can take a train,
yep.
you know, and so that people can do that or take a bus or whatever it is. But, you know, you can't do that to go to the LA Galaxy game.
No, that's right.
You know, it's across the nation on a 5-hour flight.
I mean, I did make a comment to you when we were in the stadium about that experience, and maybe to the point of what we're saying, and I sort of want to give MLS credit here, though. I mean, it is what now? It's a 25-year-old, 23-year-old league. It started after the 94 World Cup. I remember going a couple of times when it was very early in its existence. And, you know, obviously, because it was a league attempting to build itself, you know, you would find, you know, if you weren't careful, you would find yourself in a section surrounded by, you know, 60, you know, collections of...
I thought you said you had audio for this, by the way.
I do, and I will cut it in later.
Oh. Okay.
I'll just put it over the back end, over the credits and stuff, so you can hear.
Right.
I did record some chants and stuff like that.
Okay.
Nothing didn't come out as well as I thought, but I'll bung it in.
Well, here's
the
spot. If you decide to put it in, you can put it in here.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that's the DC United fans in action. But like I say, back in the day when you would come, you know, you if you weren't careful, you'd find yourself surrounded by 11-year-old kids teams. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, let's give all the youth soccer teams tickets to make them come. I think my point now, what struck me about going to MLS.
I think they still do that at some of the bigger places. I know my nephew has got to play on the field before a New England Revolutions game, which is still done at the big stadium.
Sure, but what was interesting about going to DC United the other week was I didn't feel it was that sort of experience. No. I was surrounded by a whole lot of people who were legitimately DC United fans.
Because it's a 20,000 seater, and you know they can fill it with regular folks. Whereas the other places, they got 60,000 seats, and they're like, "Well, just give away tickets and fill up the bodies."
I mean, to be fair, I think the Redskins were at home at exactly the same time when we went, so it was a Sunday afternoon game. There was no Nats game, obviously. Obviously, that schedule is worked out because the baseball stadium and DC United are probably about half a mile apart in terms of the area of DC where they've been built. But there was a Redskins game at home, the Redskins home opener for the season. The Redskins. Traditionally, I'm not saying that's the case now. Traditionally, the big bar on the block in terms of local support, although I think that has changed after years of mediocrity. But what I found interesting was, you know, by the time we got there quite early, well, obviously, as you said, we got there early, so we were some of the first people there. So we could sort of feel the stadium kick off and pick up. By the time kickoff rolled around and about 10 minutes into the game, you know, we were looking around going, oh, it's pretty full right now. I mean, I would guesstimate there were 15, 16,000 people in there on a Sunday afternoon, providing a pretty decent atmosphere. Well, what I'm saying is, for me, as someone who is probably sort of, as a soccer fan, I would imagine that in time, you know, when MLS started, they were going to appeal to people like me to help float their league. And I've been one of those people who's been a bit of a snob about it. Like, no, I watch my team in England. What do I need to watch second-rate soccer for? But to be fair, I had a really good time last week. I would probably go again on occasion. I'm not going to sit here and become an MLS fanatic because my basic opinion on the product is unchanged. But I did feel it was a very, you know, legitimate soccer experience. I would equate it to following like a second or a third division team in England.
They designed this thing with the club seats facing west. So for a day game, despite the roof,
it was hot.
And they, and you know, their main color is black.
Yes.
And they're all wearing black. And I wore a black t-shirt. I was so happy it wore, like, because I ended up getting, you know, you can see still from the arms, the farmers, it was more of a burn than a tan. But I was like, man, it is hot right here. And I talked to the folks who got us tickets, and they're like, well, we've only been to night games so far, so we've never had to confront.
Yeah.
But
I would like to go back
for a night
game.
If you were going to put the club seats in, you would have swapped the side so that the club seats would get the shade.
Yeah. So anyway, but again, we went to a brand new stadium, very well constructed, very modern, easy to get around. You know, we got there early and we just parked on the street outside.
Yeah, we were lucky there.
Yeah, we were fortunate there, but still, it's about a 15-20 minute walk from a couple of different, you know, metro stations. All in all, I think it's important for any product. I think the days of stadiums. I know during the 70s in America, they went through that phase where areas would build a stadium and, you can put two teams in there, but I think...
Well, they are going to use this for concerts, and it's these mid-sized soccer venues have become a pretty good draw for people who want to have an outdoor concert for a band, but it's not big enough to have a stadium, and maybe, you know, you've got all the amphitheaters, but even those are probably harder to do. I, you know, who knows how people price this stuff, but I've seen a number of concerts at small, at these mid-sized venues, and it's pretty cool if you're looking for like an open air field environment and you know, have a band that can crowd something with 20,000 people.
So again, I thought it was interesting. It was interesting to go. It was interesting. It's always for me as someone, I'm not a full-on train spotter in terms of stadium architecture. There are people, and I think it happens a lot in baseball in this country,
first you have to start with train spotter is a thing that people don't know. The movie is like folks who like sit around and watch trains coming out of stations and count the numbers, and they're kind of collecting which trains they've seen.
Yes.
And it's a big deal. So that's what I was saying. You need a little preface for being like, I'm not a train spotter about stadiums. Doesn't then, quite then, make sense as
and
a sense.
And the train spotter is sort of like, yeah, that guy is just a bit of a geek. Because it's not the kind of hobby that you're thinking, ooh.
Although now it's more equated with heroin use because of the movies.
Thanks to two movies, yeah.
But anyway, so yes, there's people do the baseball. I know a number of people who have like trying to collect all their visits to all the baseball parks. And like will go on little mini trips with their son or something like that to three or four places.
Well, we had the conversation on this show when I said, yeah, I went to Fenway for the first time and I'm glad I've sort of checked it off my list now. Yeah, obviously,
it was for a, you know,
sure, but what I'm saying
versus
BC game. But what I'm saying is that because I'm not a full on train spotter, but I do find stadiums and stadium architecture and the stadium experience, I do find it kind of interesting. And I'm so glad that I've been to, you know, like I say, it was interesting for me personally because I was back in England about a month ago and saw a Premier League game. No, it's not the same, but it was interesting. It was definitely less homogenized than I expected it to be. And what I mean by that is, I was whole experience. No, here. Yeah. It wasn't. I was going to see the local pro soccer team.
Yeah.
And the stadium and even the fan zone outside with you juggling the ball to get your free t-shirt. Again, there's, to me, I'm like, yeah, that's what it's about. Yeah. And so anyway, so that's us. We went to a brand new stadium.
All right.
So let's move on.
What's the next topic?
Do you have your
eSports games and Olympics or something?
No, we'll wait and do that when we actually do eSports. We've been threatening to do an eSports show.
All right.
But you do have the YouTube there. Do you want to talk about the fact that, as a James Bond fan, we have a director for the new James Bond movie?
Yeah. Are they calling it Bond 25 or is that just the...
No, they always call... Okay, so let me explain how it works when you... And then again, for people who don't know, I'm a Bond fan.
Yeah. I mean, more than a Bond fan. Yeah, I'm a
train spotter for James Bond. Exactly, yes. When there is talk of a new movie within the fan base, it gets a number, and the next one is the 25th one, and we will refer to it as Bond 25.
Is this going to be Daniel Craig, or we don't even know yet?
No, it's Daniel Craig.
Okay.
This is going to be Bond 25, and then at the moment when they actually tell us what the name is, we will all then begin referring it as that way, in the same way that I'm sure right now we don't know what the next Star Wars movie is going to be called, but people are calling it either, you know, Star Wars 9 or Star Wars 3. Do you know what I mean? That's sort of how it's referred to.
Well, Android software, everybody like talk about a number and then they get a name somewhere along the way. But
apparently, and this is an interesting side comment I'm going to make here, apparently the movies are big in terms of films giving themselves fake names. Do you know what I mean? Like, so again, if someone's making, you know, the next Star Wars movie, they will copyright phrases like, you know, the dark bookcase or something
that. Collect
and then,
them all up.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a secret code for when stuff appears.
Get a bunch of domain
names. Because there's an inside joke within Bond fandom that for many years, the next James Bond film was called Beyond the Ice. That just seemed to be one of those phrases that would float around. But again, because, you know, that's frankly a moronic title for a film, we just refer to it as Bond 25.
Bond 25.
Yeah. So Bond 25, and we talked about the movie Trainspotting just now. Originally, the director was supposed to be Danny Boyle, who directed the Trainspotting movies and a couple. And what's the zombie one? Is it 28 Days Later?
Mm-hmm. The first one was... Yeah, 20. Because
28 days.
Then he did 28 weeks. 20
days.
Later, I don't know.
He did 100. He was also the director of 127 Hours with Jane Franco. And he also directed Slumdog.
Space thing.
Space Sunshine. But also he won an Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
He was originally supposed to be the director, but then he dropped out due to creative differences. Ooh. There was a lot of panic about, well, what are we going to do? Blah, 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 blah. And then this week they announced that Corey Fukunaga,
yeah,
if I pronounce that correctly, who's going to be the new director.
And what's his... they were saying what is...
Well, his resume is notable because he's done a show that you are very fond of, the original True Detective, which we've sort of talked about on this show on and off. He was responsible for all six episodes along with a guy called Nick Pizzolatto or Nick Pizzolatto.
Pizzolatto.
The first series, the Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson one, which was very entertaining.
Which, by the way, they announced a new one coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's... I can't remember right now.
Yeah.
So he's the director of that. He also directed, is it Beasts of No Name, which we discussed on this show, which was Netflix's first ever...
Beast of No Nation?
Beasts of No Nation, which was Netflix's first
ever... Idris Elba.
Yes.
Oh, see, it's all pulling together.
Right.
Like Idris Elba, Bond movies, all that stuff, although Idris is now getting too old for it.
Getting too old. but he directed, Fukunaga directed Beasts of No Nation, which was Netflix's first full-length movie that went straight to video release, and there was discussion about, well, how can it win an Oscar if it's on video? And we discussed that
right now on some Netflix movie or Amazon movie that just came out, like, where they're running it for like a week in New York and trying to claim
Oscars. And then he's also involved with the latest big Netflix show called Maniac, which stars Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, and he also wrote It. Remember the Stephen King film last week? He wrote that and was originally supposed to direct it, but then had a falling out with the producers over, you know, the script and all this sort of thing. So
I wrote it, of course, since it was a book already. I guess he just
He adapted it, but he is credited with the screenplay for that, even though he didn't direct it. But anyway, he's been named as the new director of Bond 25, and Bond fandom,
we're all slated
to film starting next spring, and then will be released apparently in February of 2020. So because of the big Danny Boyle dropping out, they lost their original November date, which has then moved it away from the second Wonder Woman. And also, apparently, there's supposed to be a Star Wars movie that's due to come out there. Although this week, did you read the articles that Disney had officially said, ooh, we're going to slow down on pumping out these Star Wars movies. We're going to do it at a more leisurely pace, a la James Bond, which we do one every 6 years at the moment.
A la Eric recommending that to them.
Yeah, yeah, because those movies. But anyway, so that was a bit of a news that was exciting to me as a Bond fan. And as someone who, we have had many discussions on the show, I ended up watching both True Detectives and enjoyed them for what they were. I tend to like the second series more than most people seem to like.
You're trying to be contrarian.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
No, I like the second series too, but I like the first one better.
The first one was good, although frankly, slightly underwhelming at the end, if you want my opinion, spoiler. but at the time, obviously I don't watch these things when they come out. I only watched them years later. But at the time, I remember you were very big on the original True Detective, and your position has not changed. So I find it interesting that this chap is now going to get to do a James Bond movie, which is, you know, quite a step up in terms of, you know, these big productions and the amount of cash.
I'm sure he will make some interesting visual stuff out of it, because he did a pretty good job with the other
one. Yeah, so I'm excited about that. So that's a bit of news there. Mm-hmm. And what else do we have? So we have a YouTube rabbit hole.
We were grasping at topics, but recently I was, people are probably familiar with, we'll call it, anesthesia genre YouTube videos.
Yeah.
A bunch of them are wisdom teeth, and not all. Like a bunch of them are people go get their wisdom teeth out, and if anybody's had their wisdom teeth out nowadays, you know, they totally knock you out. I believe, and we were talking about this before,
although you can still, my oral surgeon, I had my wisdom teeth out very late in life.
So did I.
I still had at least one a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I still remember, though, so we're now talking at the last 6, 7, 8 years. When I scheduled the appointment, I was given the choice as to whether I wanted to go out or not. So while, to your point, people are getting knocked out,
I just think more people are, is my point. I think more people, like,
that's just the only way to do it.
If nothing else, they can make a video out of it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them are now intravenous type of thing. And the thing, we didn't have enough time to research it. No. I could talk to my doctor for it. Like, a bunch of the, I don't think it's necessarily traditional, you're fully out. It's like you're mostly out and you're not going to remember anything that happened.
We had this discussion about my colonoscopy, which, if you're not sure about, you can listen to that show from back in April, or you can listen to our Best Of show where we discuss these levels of anesthesia.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I'm not sure really which ones still are being used in these situations, but most of these people, they come out of it. Like, the reason I think it's IV is because most of these people, when they are now on video afterwards, they don't have, like, marks on their face from wearing a mask, and they all have old IV taps in there.
Well,
then there's a bunch that are people, for whatever reason, a lot of broken arms. Like, there's a series of kids with broken arms.
Oh, really?
Like, and it must be, if you have a really badly broken arm, they do that. You know, the one was a broken leg, but I think they probably put you under so they can put pins in and things like that if it's bad enough.
Oh, so you're talking about, I was confused for a moment. I thought you were talking about kids going to the dentist and leaving with broken arms.
No. Meaning, like, not all dentists. A lot of it is wisdom teeth.
I was like, ooh, what dentist?
The majority of it is wisdom teeth, but a bunch isn't. And
to be honest, 17th century dentistry.
To critique the genre, the wisdom teeth have the downside of the fact usually people have a bunch of gauze in their mouth, and so they can't really talk. Whereas if you get the broken arm ones, it's much better. They're like just regular talking kind of thing. But so these are all post
surgery
video. So there are a couple of big ones that are that people have probably seen before that I thought we'd play just to introduce them to people. But like there are thousands of these videos to the point where I think a bunch of people like they're film like it's not the first ones I think were like a parent or somebody being like, oh, this is interesting, let me film this. But now people are planning it, so a bunch of the videos will have somebody saying, and a bunch of them are teenagers because I know they're like, oh, I'm gonna be a YouTube star.
Yeah.
And they'll be beforehand, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to go to the dentist, we're filming me, blah blah blah, well, I'll see you in after I come out. And then their friend films it afterwards, and some of the people like filming themselves even though they're like completely out of it.
To your point, when you brought up that we might as well discuss this week because it was we didn't have much else on the docket. What I found most interesting was the fact when before you start playing these things, you said there are whole playlists obviously across YouTube now because people are filming these things. But what was more amazing wasn't the number of videos, but the fact that so many these videos had so many views.
Oh yeah, well, this David After Dentist has 137 or almost 138 million views now, and we're going to give it one more. So
138 million views. That's more people than watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's like three Super Bowls worth of TV viewers.
Yeah, I mean, you have probably watched it five times myself, but but I'm sure, you know, the people who post this stuff, I mean, this one's posted by, I think, his family member, and they make money, right? I mean, because there's advertising. If you have that many views, YouTube pays you for having your video up there. And I kind of wonder how much money they've made of it. And this is 10 years old now. No, actually, there's another video. It's not anesthesia thing. The thing Charlie bit my finger, where like it's a kid in the back seat, and his little brother like bites his finger.
Oh, really?
Charlie bit my finger, and he's like complaining about it, and he keeps putting his finger in the mouth, and you know it's very cute. But that
you don't watch a lot of rubbish.
That one's been around for 10 years. Well, the funny thing is, like one of the videos I was watching, this person who's completely doped up and was not it was a broken arm thing. She's like so out of it. She starts going, Charlie bit my finger. So now like it's like this self-referential thing. I mean, it's not but she's now referencing YouTube videos while she's making a YouTube video, you know, and being like, it just shows you how this stuff is all self-fulfilling. And it's like a whole culture. So anyway, let me play David After
Dentist. So this is David After Dentist. So, and I think it's probably fair to say that this is arguably the number one.
It's like the Citizen Kane of starts very abruptly.
This is Bond 1. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. How did it go?
I didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
I feel fine.
Kind of felt good, didn't it?
Is this real life?
Yeah, this is real life.
Okay, now I have two fingers.
Good.
Four fingers?
Nah. Don't put it in your mouth.
He's trying to put his finger in your mouth.
Because he's heard about the other video.
Yeah.
You feel good?
I can't see anything.
Yes, you can.
If you look at the video, it's a kid in the back of a car. His head's lolling
about.
Stay in
your seat. Oh.
I think he's trying to shake off the buzz.
Yeah. I don't feel tired.
You don't? No?
Do I have stitches?
Uh-huh.
Do I have stitches?
Yes.
On my teeth?
Yeah. Don't touch it. Don't.
Why can't I touch it?
Because it'll mess up the stitches.
You have four eyes.
Yeah.
Why is this happening to me?
It's okay, bud. It's just from the medicine. Okay?
Is this going to be forever?
No. No, it won't be forever.
All right, so the nice thing about that one's nice and concise, and they don't... spend all day on it. Now, there's a bunch of them that are like 20 minutes long.
But. Yeah, and I want to say something right now. That and it's... Okay, so I can't believe I'm now trying to apply regular standards of some sort of art criticism to a YouTube thing. It is just a constant shot of a kid sitting in the back.
Right.
There's no moving around. There's no moving it to get other people's reactions. All you hear is clearly that's got to be his dad talking to him. You just see this kid. I can't get over the fact that that has 137 million views. I can't get over it. I'm just trying to, because again, if you send that to me, put it this way, I'm not going to send that to anyone else to go, you got to watch this. Yeah, kind of amusing, the little kids. No. Yeah, we've all been there. I mean, I don't know, but I'm just surprised.
But you're also not a person to be on Facebook sending cat videos around. I mean, just a ton of people would watch
that's the thing.
It's two minutes, it's a bite size.
That's my point. I'm aghast. Aghast is the wrong word. I'm astounded by what people will watch on YouTube.
Yeah,
and I'll watch a lot of rubbish on YouTube.
There's a reason people aren't going to movies and things. They want their entertainment in 2 minute bites. So there's a bunch of them come after that. And I'm just going to play another one here that is, brothers convince little sister of zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
And this one lists only 6 million views, but there's like 18 different versions. So this woman ends up and her brothers end up appearing on the Ellen show. So there's the Ellen clip where it has most of this video, but then it also has her talking to Ellen. And that's got 11 million more. So there's easily like another 50 or 100 views of this thing.
Just play that back to yourself. She ended up on Ellen's show. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. So like her family, and it's not just her brothers, but her mother and everything got in on the act where they say, okay, she's going to come out of this stuff with it. And she's
obviously gone to the dentist. She's been all drugged up.
Yeah.
Been out for the count. Now she's back in the car.
And now she's in the car, and they're going to get a whole conspiracy here thing to figure out. And I don't. We'll see how it plays. If we have to explain, we'll just jump in and talk about it. This is actually beforehand, so we don't need to get too into it. And it has like captions. So today our little sister is getting listened to.
Final words, Melissa?
No.
This is before she goes into the surgery. So let's see. So like I said, it's a good one.
You're ready to ride this out.
So this is playing on the radio in the car. They've put a tape in, I guess.
Okay.
The Center for Disease Control in Washington, D.C. has issued a viral outbreak warning. State and local officials have reported cases of high fever, nausea, death, and even cannibalism. Stay in place until further notice.
What the heck? Did you...
We're driving like a slug. I can get to the house.
Hold on. Mom's calling. Hey, did you just get that emergency alert? Yes?
Can you get help right now? I got notice
from
the emergency broadcast system. There's some sort of a weird virus outbreak
because
this is not a
cat. Okay, I'm pulling the driver right now.
We're not the U.S. Marines. I can't leave if I'm going now.
Okay, there's Barry. He's got the Jeep.
So the brothers at the house, like, loading it up, apparently, like, with all kinds of supplies.
What?
Now they've left her alone in the car.
Cannibals? Guys, there's zombies. Police are coming or something. And
yeah, it's literally all over the news.
Trying to put cabbage, a garden hoe isn't what we want. We have guns. Why are you putting garden equipment in a car?
By the way, I think they're in Virginia.
You're
going to
need to defend yourself. Oh, really? I can't be with you the whole time, okay? Look, this is how you use it. Safety's right here. Pull this.
They've
try
prevented, like,
just
one of these things
it,
you
okay?
pick off tops of shells and they're trying to protect.
Hold the weapon! Hold it up! No, hold it up! Hold it up, okay? You got it? Okay, I'll be right back.
They very. This
what
has,
is this supposed to do for me? Give me a knife! How am I supposed to defend myself?
Listen, we can only take one pet. Which pet? The cat or the dog?
The cat! You idiot! No!
You're with the dog.
He's the worst. He's already dying. You leave him.
Okay,
get the cat.
Okay, I'll get the cat. Mom said we're leaving the dog.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Dad said that since he's in Las Vegas, that he's close to Mexico and he wants us to meet him in Mexico. How good is your Spanish still from high school?
I can say pants.
Melissa, we can only take Funfetti or chocolate cake. Which one do we take?
Funfetti.
Funfetti? You want Funfetti or chocolate?
Why do we need that?
Which? No, Millicent, this is important. This will be what we're living off of. Which one? Funfetti chocolate. Do you think Costco? Should we go to Costco first?
No, it's gonna be a bloodbath in there.
She's probably right.
She's probably right.
Millicent, what about Mexico?
Why do I have to be on inside?
Millicent, what about.
Anyway,
Millicent, so, you know where we're gonna go? We're gonna go back home, and you're gonna get in bed, and you're gonna sleep for the next couple hours, because there's no zombie apocalypse.
Oh. Anyway, so that's the nice little ending kind of thing. So this one, you know, you can see they edited things, and they cut it together, they took some effort, and I think they got fairly famous off of that one.
I wonder, you know, there is a part of me, you know how cynical I am, right?
You think that was made up?
That I've got a nagging feeling behind my left ear that it's somehow, when you actually watch it, she seems slightly more lucid than I mean, again, and I've watched a couple of these things myself. I've not watched for hours like you have, but I've watched a couple of things in myself over time. And to be fair, I'm one of those people who has been under the influence of the medical anesthesia on a number of different occasions. She seems slightly more. Is lucid the right word, or is that the
well?
Wrong
it's the thing.
Word?
The thing is, it's I not like know. It's not I, like people who are intoxicated, like drunk, where they're like you can't like hear them. It's a brain change, which really kind of leads into my next thing. Is if you watch a bunch of these, like it does seem a little strange. Put that aside, but I just got caught up because you start seeing patterns in what people do. That I imagine there's like a medical study could be done on the basis of all these videos. Now the videos are probably self-selected. They don't catch the person who's just boringly sitting there lolling their head around.
Yeah.
But there's certain like
which
things that emerge.
No, I think I'm that like, person.
So you heard David at the beginning saying you have four eyes because he's seeing double. And all these people are seeing double when they do that. But they never recognize that they're seeing, like they never go, oh, I'm seeing double. They always say, you have four eyes. You have two heads. It's like something about the drugs must have you accepting a certain degree of reality of what you're seeing. And not like knowing why it is like, okay, I'm seeing double, but I don't go, oh, my vision is blurry. These people are always saying, you literally have two heads. You have four eyes. I saw a bunch of them where like talking to parents and like, you have two heads and you have two heads and everybody has two heads in here. It's not, oh, I'm seeing double, you know, so you don't recognize that.
Yeah, it's just an interesting sort of now running sort of parallel lines with like doing LSD or E or
yeah,
something.
No,
like
it's,
that,
I think it's not. I mean, it's a different. It must be whatever the drug. Like, and another one that you'd see repeatedly is where the people would clearly know that who they were looking at looked like their mother or father or family member or something, but they say they aren't them. They'd be like, oh, but that's not you. Like one person said, oh, you killed my mother, where you like, oh, you guys are aliens. You're not really, and not even seeming overly distressed about it, just by being, and it must be something about like, it's like that kid, the David saying, is this real life? It's like, you kind of like, part of your brain is registering as real, but other part of your brain is not firing properly.
Well, here's the interesting thing now, because I'm now going to add layers upon layers of this. All right, so, you know, no one ever goes and are unaware that they're going to be under, you know, anesthesia,
yeah.
Right? We all go, we know it, right? So we know we're under anesthesia, okay? The first time you're under anesthesia, then you as a person, your memory now has a sense of what it's going to be like the second time you're under anesthesia, right? You're going to sort of have a vague idea of, like, I still remember the very first time I ever went under, all I kept talking about for weeks after was, I was just sitting there looking at a picture of the picture that was on the wall, and then the next thing you know, I'm waking up and it was all over. And I was just amazed that there was just this sort of time machine type lapse in my house. What I find interesting now, to the point you've just made, is because there is, again, layer on layer, there is now this whole YouTube culture around, clearly, something that gets 137 million views, so, there's a whole YouTube culture of filming people in anesthesia. So now as a person...
There's a few of them who basically go, is Ellen here? Where's Ellen?
Right.
Because they saw the other video about Ellen.
So I find it interesting now that people can go under anesthesia, you're going to have whatever reaction you have out on the other side, but no one ever sits there and sees someone waving a cell phone around going, oh, you fave. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. Oh. You're right. In terms of the effect it has on your brain, it definitely puts you in this place where it must shut down whatever in your mind your sort of short-term memory or awareness. Right. And I'm not explaining it right because I'm not a doctor, but what I'm saying is people all come out and no one just sits, like we just watched the zombie one. So she's been under, and while I'm slightly suspicious of that one, she was older. I think she was clearly in her late teens, yeah. She's come out of it, and she's having a perfectly straight-up conversation about zombies. At no moment is she ever going, are you having me on, or what's right. that? There was one moment in that one where she looked straight at the camera. But you see, if you watch that again, she looks straight at the camera. And when I watch that there, I'm thinking, ooh, that's not right. But again, she doesn't say anything, and she doesn't...
Right.
I don't know. I just find it interesting that whatever the anesthesia does to you...
Well, first of all, most of them can't see very well, so they may not really be looking at it. Can't see this stuff. But yeah, like, I have saw... There were some I saw where the people are filming themselves.
Really?
But they're having these weird, random conversations about stuff. Because, you know, like, it's kind of like... I mean, not to say too much, but, like... We've all had a decent buzz on from having a beer or something like that, and
I am aware of that, and, that condition. Yes,
there. I find that there's like a something, some certain things in your brain, even though you might do something foolish or act foolish or say the wrong thing to people. There's some line in there, like somehow, like there's a part of your brain that says, "Oh, here's a rule about something I'm going to do," or
right.
the way, and it carries through. Like it doesn't wash away in this process. And so I think that's what, like, if you were really into filming yourself on a camera, that you don't. You almost don't quite, like, that part is, you can hold that, but meanwhile you have this extra layer of stuff.
Well, okay, so you make an interesting, you made an interesting point there. I tend to be one of those people that if I end up in the condition that you have just discussed, there is a part of my brain that is still functioning and is aware of my surroundings and how I've got to this moment.
Right.
Whereas what's interesting is with people coming out of anesthesiology, you never see anyone sitting there going, oh, this is because I've been put under. Well, it's like, it's like to a larger...
People know about that stuff.
Okay. Because, you know, I think it's very rare. I've seen other people over-imbibe with alcohol, and they know, you know, everyone kind of has that sort of base moment where you know how you've got there type thing. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what's going to happen next. You don't really remember, but you kind of understand at some level
You know how to call an Uber to get home.
Yes.
And, you know, like, you don't lose that. I mean, people can get to the point of losing that stuff, but usually it's like, okay, I may say something stupid to somebody I don't know, or bump into somebody, get in a fight or something, you know, like something.
But I've come out of the dentist.
You know how to press a button and get a ride.
I've come out of the dentist and been in the car and had my ride home and been... You know, people have told me back how I behaved, and yes, I was slightly belligerent and what have you. And yet, it's only later when I've come around that I've gone, well, that's because of the anesthesia. My point is...
Oh, yeah, because you don't... But like I had my neck surgery, had my knee surgery, and each one of those I came out. And when I was having conversations with people afterwards, which I know back, I didn't think... I was addled.
That's my point.
That's why these people are behaving this way, because they don't. There's a whole bunch.
And that's my point about what anesthesia must do something to the parts of your mind that it is. It's right. about short term memory.
Yeah, this is one girl
which alcohol doesn't.
Like you know, you can tell. Like, so her brother must have gone through this, and she was like, "Oh, I'm going to be completely fine. You'll see." Like, you know, you were crazy kind of thing. And she comes out and she's swearing up and down about how she's totally fine, and yet in the middle of it she'd start like singing a song. She's like screaming out the window of the car, and she's like, I'm totally fine, it's totally normal, you know, like there's nothing going on with me, because a part of you is just basically saying, well, yeah. I mean, and people are drunk like that too. They'll be like, oh, I'm not drunk, and you're like, yeah, you're drunk, but you're so it's just very interesting. So like other things you saw, like certain number of people get super duper emotional one way or the other, either
yes.
lovey or whatever. Like one, there's one long video about this woman who's proposing to the nurse, who's a male nurse, who's like very very well put together, like a male nurse with styled hair and stuff, and she's just like, oh, we're gonna get married, it's gonna be great, and she's going on and on, and he's very politely like sort of deflecting her for a while. Quite a few where the people end up crying, you know, about whatever it is, and they'll even acknowledge, why am I crying? Like, I don't,
yeah,
what am I crying about? Like, there's tears coming out of my eyes, what's going on here, kind of thing. There's a bunch of that the kids, it seems like, or I saw some of the more grown-up people fall into a funny routine, like they adopt a new person. Like, this was this one very long one of a kid who's, I mean, probably in his early teens or something like that. I think he was a broken arm type of case. And he starts talking about going to Abu Dhabi and buying a Ferrari. And he's
really
doing it in his voice. You remember, Weird Science.
Yeah.
And this thing, Anthony Michael Hall's drunk, and he's like, "Your kids can't handle this smoke," and he's doing that voice. I don't know if he'd seen the movie or something. He's like, "Yeah, we're gonna go to Abu Dhabi, me." And he's going on for 10 minutes with this voice, and his family members are like, What is this from? Like, it did make me think of, it's the kind of thing, if you were just hanging around with your 10 or 12 year old buddies,
okay,
you might be doing a funny voice that you wouldn't do around your family members, because whatever it is, and for whatever reason that comes out. And that he's in that character. He's in that character the whole time, basically. There's another one with a slightly older kid who, he's still in his baseball uniform, and he must have broke his arm in the game.
Oh, okay.
And he's cursing so much. He's like, "Effing this, yes." And then they'd be like, "You gotta quiet." "Oh yeah, gotta quiet down, gotta quiet down." And then like 2 seconds later, he's up there and doing this stuff and yelling, and his parents are starting to... Now, meanwhile, they're filming the kid for 20 minutes doing this stuff. They're not that panicked about it.
Yeah.
Which kind of takes me into the last piece of it, which is... there's definitely something very creepy about this whole thing. Like, this is...
What do you mean creepy about it?
The filming and putting it out there.
Yes, yes.
Now, like... You know, I think all these kids, it's with their consent. It's not like somebody snuck it out. It's their parents. I mean, their parents aren't going to put video. Maybe the little kids obviously don't even have any idea. But the teenagers, you know, if they told their parents, don't put that out there. And it's like, it's a symptom of everybody believing, not everybody, but there's a lot of people in that generation who see what's happened with David gets, you know, and gets a million views. Why not put my stuff out there? Because maybe mine will be the one that becomes a viral video, and then everybody watches it, and then I'll be semi-famous. Yeah. I mean, then they're making money
off YouTube.
We could talk about this separately. You know, there's a number of people who are coming out of the YouTube thing where they either make a living in that, or they may even be making a step into movies or TV shows or things like that. Not a bunch, but there's a few cases of that where we don't even know about it because it's not our generation.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that road right now, but no, it was interesting. I read something the other week that there were people that were trying to withdraw from their YouTube personality,
right?
They'd actually tried to promote
especially
themselves
if they did it as a YouTube, you know, like,
they tried to sort of make themselves a YouTube star and chase the hits and obviously some revenue, and then they were now backpedaling away from that because it was either intrusive or this, that. It is interesting. I know I have been told that my post-anesthesia personality is belligerent, but I'm also told that I get very flirty with whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever is bringing me around.
Yeah.
So I can't decide. That must speak to my personality at some moment.
Those are both parts of you.
Oh, thank you. Yes. But only with the people bringing me around. Like when I'm in the car, I'm not flirting with other people at the traffic light, but with the people who are bringing me around and sort of bringing me back to consciousness, that seems to be my default. And then I'm in the car, and then I'm belligerent in the car. Not amusing, just belligerent.
I don't think I'm belligerent in that stuff. I think I'm more. I have a better heart than you, I guess.
Okay, yeah. But it is interesting. It is a cottage industry is the phrase I was looking for this whole notion of taking this one particular subject and sticking it up on YouTube.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I'll say about it.
I mean, you to yourself, before I let you go on there, you said to me before the show, I watched these for like an hour and a half. And I know that is
one
part
of the few
of the
things
YouTube
that I've really
phenomenon.
Seen. Yeah. Like, music... Sports, I can end up like getting caught up in a few things, but eventually I'm like, how many goals can I see? How many home runs? You know, like this.
There is everything, because
I was curious. I'm like, what's going on here? Like with these people, what's the common thread? What, you know, how many people are going to do that? Oh my God, this list has got, you know, 400 videos. And by the way, so what happened is if you watch a couple of those videos, it eventually like they'll. I think YouTube must create its own mix lists. And so eventually you'll find like a playlist that has 100 of these things. And then if you get deeper in the playlist, suddenly it's doing other things. It's just trying to keep you roped in there. But in any event, so I found myself very caught in. Now the other part
I don't find them interesting myself.
No.
And I want to say this. Like if you know, yeah, you showed me those. Okay, I've seen them. I have no desire to follow up on it. There was one a couple.
Well, this is what I was saying is it got more interesting once you saw 10 of them and saw this commonality that you're like, okay, is the next one going to be like, who's the next person going to be like, what is, and you started seeing these threads because it was now not about what was going on at the media thing. It was like, how does that relate to this other one? You know, this one guy comes out of it and doesn't recognize his wife as his wife, but is talking about how great looking she is. I'm your wife. Man, I did great. This is fantastic. I am so fired up, man.
When I watch YouTube, I watch a lot of TV on YouTube, and then I watch things that are, for want of a better word, more produced. And again, obviously nowadays with modern technology, you can whip out your phone or your tablet and you can make a film. I tend not to find that stuff very interesting. I just like, no, this is home movie time. I'm not interested in that. But you, on the other hand, are much more, much more interested in it from this sort of slightly removed position of I'm studying human behavior, which seems to me your defense for watching this stuff for 2 hours.
Yeah, well, that's it. And then the other part about it that is like just on the reality level of it is what is anesthesia doing to people's brains? Like, you know, like this is a lot of people who have like addled brains. And now again, I think about that a little bit more and I go, well, shoot, people drink beer and smoke pot and do all these things on a regular. So like, I mean, is it, if you have one trip to the dentist, but it's so unusual that it seems weird. And the fact that this is a lot of people on anesthesia who go home. Like, you know, it's none of this hanging around there until you've fully recovered, especially wisdom teeth people. There's a bunch where like siblings will go at the same time because I'm sure their parents are like, we can stay home from work one time and like take care of the two of them at the same time. And so they'll be bouncing off of each other. But I'm like, are these wisdom teeth factory? How did they crank out two of these people at the same time?
I am curious. And because it's in the medical field, I think human nature is we tend to be more accepting. We don't ask any questions. You just mentioned people that, you know, people that smoke different products, people that drink. We're all made well aware of the negative effect that those experiences can have on your health. There never seems to be any question. I mean, again, I've been under now I've been under like six times in the last, I don't know, on average, once every other year, I've been under for different things. Is my brain being affected in any way by constantly being put into this state? That's the question I have.
You've had beer more often than that.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So, like, that's,
yeah, but I'm very well aware that doing that is probably, you know, taking a couple of years off your life every time.
The difference is, I think those of us who go to a bar are now familiar with the effects, have seen it on other people. There's like a body of knowledge whereas there's not a body of knowledge for like what the heck the anesthesia is doing for you. Like,
I mean, what I'm saying is we're all very well aware of people who drink too much, constantly getting into this state, what it does to your different organs, and it might take some years off your life, whatever it may be. But your brain being put into this position once every other year, where it's completely, I mean, again, for you to be knocked out and come out the other side, they've completely fried your circuits for that amount of time. So what I'm saying is, at what moment does your brain begin to not fully recover from being under? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So, but there's one where, I don't know how they got to this point, but it's the woman's videotaping her kid after a regular trip to the dentist. It doesn't look like things there. And halfway through, she goes, what's going on with you? Like, she was surprised to see her daughter this addled, and she's like, I gotta go back inside and figure out what they gave you. And so it's a very short video, and then like it didn't really tell you what happened, but I'm, you know, like, listen, if you went to pick up your daughter and you thought she's getting her teeth cleaned and then she comes in completely like talking about zombies or something like that, you go, hold on a second, what did this dentist? And like, listen, let's all acknowledge that not all dentists are created equal.
No, that's, you know, true. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's bad dentists and there's good dentists. It's just like any product out there. There's bad plumbers and good plumbers.
Yeah.
So somebody's got to be the worst dentist. And if you come coming out of that and you're letting the worst dentist administer this stuff.
To be fair, though, this is a discussion for another day. There's also that human factor. If you give someone a pill that's really an aspirin, but tell them that this is a pill is something else, do you preemptively start behaving differently because you believe, oh, he's, you know, Eric's just giving me something that he said was LSD.
I'm going to start.
Do I start seeing things even though you've just thrown me one aspirin and I don't know the difference? Do you know what I mean?
I didn't tell you, but that coffee you're drinking is whiskey.
So. Oh, okay. Well, that, get ready for the belligerent side of me. anything else then on YouTube videos and just...
No, if anybody stuck out this far, we're definitely planning on doing something around personality tests and Myers-Briggs tests.
Yes, yes, we are.
I know we have one expert, a friend of mine, who's a big expert, coworker of mine, who's a big expert, so I'm going to get some information. But if anybody has anything they want to offer about their perspectives, I'd welcome that.
Because I think our understanding of that show that's going to be coming up soon is we're actually going to take the personality test.
Which I understand, it's only take about 5 minutes, but we'll read off the questions, we'll take, it's a knockoff because you have to pay.
Oh, yeah.
decent amount of money.
You're joking,
I think the Myers-Briggs, they only do it on paper. In fact, I do have a copy of the Myers-Briggs on paper. And so we can just check the questions against the ones we're doing online.
So we're going to learn.
It will come out with the... and this is not the test that decides whether you're a garbage, you know, man or something like that. I took one of those in high school.
No, it tells you what your personality
is. It's a personality. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's on these acronyms, and we need to do enough research to know what we're talking about, and especially since my colleague and coworker will really put the boot in if we mess this up.
Yes.
So she was offering a lot of research information. It's been in the news a bit lately because somebody wrote a book on the history of the Myers-Briggs test, but so you may be seeing some things.
But we're going to be doing that on the show.
Yep.
All right. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.